Aloha, friends. I'm Melissa. Welcome to 6-Bit Storybooks Podcast, a podcast with its heart for encouraging you to observe the beauty around you and love the moment that you can create. Our special guest today shares the best ideas for making a creative place in our newest issue of 6-Bit Storybooks publication, Dwell. She shares beautiful corners of her creative studio with us in Dwell, but I wanted her to share more with you here today. So, a bit unrelated to her article, she and I talked today about preparing for creative moments of spontaneous creativity, if you will, by getting your creative spaces ready. We also discuss how digging into other crafts makes your spinning or knitting, crochet, sewing, all those things more enriched. So, today, have a listen to episode 16, Clear the Way. My special guest is a 2-time published author, a sewing instructor featured in places like Craftsy and Berta Style, not to mention that she has so many of her own sewing patterns, and one created especially for Dwell. Deborah Mobies is filled with creative encouragement for you and me, whether we sew or not. We talk today about craftiness and being open and available for creative endeavors today, but for you to keep, you can simply text 6-BITS 16, so number 6-BITS 16, to the number 44222 for a helpful video of what to look for when choosing a sewing machine. Whether it's your first or an upgrade, our guest Deborah Mobies knows about getting the key features on a sewing machine. And sewing's not just her passion, but it's her profession. So she really knows what she's talking about. She also shares some money-saving tips to consider when searching for your sewing machine. So again, you can text number 6-BITS-16, so 6-BIT 16, no spaces, to 44222, and we will send that to your inbox right away, or you can simply visit the podcast show notes. Before Deborah and I chat, I wanted to give you a quick update on my year of 100 no's. I have managed to get 5 or 6 more since we last chatted, bringing my tally to a total of 7 no's. I need to set it up to ask a lot more because as of right now, if I stay on this trajectory, I'm going to be short several no's at year end. However, I am getting the yeses. So many exciting things in the works because I went out with the mindset, ask and get the no, and you win. So one quick not knitting yes that may turn into a knitting relation soon is a super fast story I want to share right now. So to take that idea and expound, the year of 100 no's is a personal challenge for me, and you can hear more about it on the last episode. It's a super short episode, and I talk about the title of it is Year of 100 No's. But I'm applying it every day. Right after recording episode 15, which was a couple weeks ago, I was on a bike ride with my husband and my eldest daughter, and I passed by the house of a neighbor that I've seen walking her dog from time to time when I walk mine. We usually smile, not much else, but she seemed so genuinely nice. I was still mulling over how pleasant she seemed, and her dog, Leonard, he's so cute. He's just this big, soft, happy dog. And if you have a happy dog, you have to be kind of a neat person. So anyways, I was still mulling over how nice she seemed on the way back on the bike ride. So I decided, okay, here's my no. I parked at the end of her driveway and walked up and rang her doorbell, completely cold turkey. I introduced myself and asked her if I could give her my phone number for her to text me if she ever wanted company walking her dog, and she took it. And then she gave me hers. And guys, we've been walking our dogs together almost every afternoon since. And last night, we even snuck out for frozen yogurt together. Not with our dogs, just the two of us. Was I feeling awkward walking up that driveway? You betcha. Oh my goodness. I did feel really awkward. Was I thinking she'd say no? I don't want to go for a walk with you, or no, you can't give me your phone number. No, not really. I was more afraid that she was going to look at me like, what in the world is this crazy lady and her bright yellow bike doing here in my driveway? So no, no no's there, friends, but I now have a new friend, and even our husbands have joined walks occasionally. It's just a big win, even though I didn't get the no to add to my list. Our next interview was a no attempt as well, but as you will hear, Deborah's yes to me is a big win for all of us today. So enjoy. Well, thank you so much, Deborah, for joining in. I'm excited about our time together today.
Me too. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, not only do we have this chance that you and I are going to sit here together and talk, but the subscribers to 6Bits have the opportunity to tour around your home studio and to hear from your heart some things that went into crafting a special space for you. And so I was wondering, because they're going to be getting that, and people who don't subscribe to the newsletter or the actual publication, they want to learn a little bit too. So on that note, I'm wondering if we can flip the script on that, and if you could talk about some things that you've done in your creative spaces that haven't worked well and why, and maybe what did you do to apply that, what we could see as a negative lesson, as a positive thing.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I love this question.
Do you? Okay. Because I was going to say, if not, I have a couple of examples in my own life that maybe could prime you, but I thought for sure you've been around the block. I mean, because you've been doing this now how long?
More than 10 years.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of time in your own creative spaces. So I'm sure you've had some negative, what could have been negative moments, and knowing your personality, I'm sure you flipped it.
I have. Well, and I've had, I was trying to think of how many times we've moved house since I started doing this. And I think it's four. I think we're in our fourth house since then. Plus I had a retail store at one point that I had to close. So so the first reaction to that question, of course, was the biggest thing that doesn't work is too much stuff. That I think a lot of us, my husband calls it analysis paralysis. You have too many options. And so for a long time, you would look on Pinterest or on people's blogs or even social media, and you would see a lot of people were decorating with their craft supplies. Yes. So they would have their yarn on display. They'd have their fabric on display. And I love the idea that you're constantly inspired by those things. But what I also saw was that that became your creative expression, was organizing and reorganizing these supplies rather than working with them. And for, at least for fabric, I have observed and have been victim to, a lot of times you like the fabric, you like looking at it because it's all neatly stacked and folded and color coordinated so much that you start to not want to use it.
Don't touch it. It's so pretty.
Right, right.
I don't want to break up the
set. And, you know, and then it becomes more of a collector attitude rather than a creator attitude. And that has been very stifling for me. When we moved out of the last house that we lived in, where I had my first big studio, and we packed everything up, there were more boxes for my 250 square foot workspace than there were for any other room in our 1700 square foot house. I really think there were 35 boxes for that room alone, for books and fabric and notions and just stuff. And I was horrified. It was horrified.
Sitting here thinking, that's a lot of boxes. I move a lot.
And where was all this stuff? And man, these are all really heavy. And So I was sort of embarrassed, quite frankly, that I had so much stuff that I had no awareness that I had so much. And so I'd sort of started hoarding, like I kept expecting one of those TV shows to come and find me, take all my things away. And then, so we moved into a rental house after that. And I didn't have my own space. I was in the dining room and it was an open floor plan. So the dining room was really, there was a door between the dining room and the kitchen, but then it was just open to the main living room, which was at the front of the house. And I had so many bookshelves and shelves and whatever that it spilled into the dining room. And it was not conducive to feeling good about creating something new. I didn't wake up in the morning and go in and feel inspired, which is what you would think because everything's on display and isn't that great? I walked in and I felt like I was being overrun by all my stuff.
Your
But
stuff.
so we recently, I still work in the dining room, different house, but I still work in the dining room and it's still visible to the front door. You walk in the front door and it's the first thing you see. And I have pared down and pared down and pared down. I did a big destash where I sold off a lot of extra supplies and materials and things like that on Instagram. And that was just this giant breath of fresh air to move those things onto happier homes and not my house. And looked around and thought, this is amazing. And recently opened a new studio specifically for shooting video and shooting photographs that's not my home. And the thing that I learned that I didn't expect was when I started moving things out of my everyday studio, what I consider my personal workspace, into this public space where I shoot video and have classes, was this sense of renewed energy and renewed optimism and renewed excitement that I had all these ideas that I'd forgotten I had that came to life and took on energy and excitement and potential again, things that I had thought, oh, but when am I ever going to do that? Suddenly I thought, I'll just do that now. And I didn't expect, it was almost like I'd popped a cork by taking things out of my workspace. So it's counterintuitive. You would think that by having less stuff around you, that you would be less inspired. And I have found the opposite to be true by curating, by being very selective about the things that are in front of my eyes and surrounding my workspace every day, I feel like I have more room to expand my ideas. And that's been really, really inspiring and has promoted a lot more creativity for me.
Well, for those of our friends that are listening right now and that are probably feeling what I'm feeling as you're talking, oh my gosh, what a great idea. How do I do that? I want to do that, and I'm stuck in this, they may be thinking I'm stuck in this room that has a lot of stuff. Do you mind sharing with us a little bit of that kind of selection process through which you went through and picked and choose and got rid of and keep? And what are the ways that you managed to pare down kind of what was your list of what are you going to keep and what are you going to get rid of? What becomes utility and functional and what becomes, okay, guys, you're out of here.
Well, so the first thing I did was when I did this destash. So basically, I went on Instagram and I sold off all my stuff by saying, I've got this stuff. Who wants it? The first thing I did was get rid of duplicates, which sounds almost inane. It's so simple. But a lot of us have a lot of duplicates. You've got eight pair of size 10 knitting needles. Who needs eight pair? You just need your favorite pair. And so giving myself permission to pick a favorite was a big step.
So did you pick a favorite sewing machine?
I
I'm just
did.
kidding.
I
Yeah,
did.
because
Yeah,
you have more than one
I only
sewing
have
machine.
two.
That's
I
why I
only
got
have
you.
so one of them went to the other studio and the other one stayed at home. But part of it, like when you're little and you've got stuffed animals on the bed and you don't want to put any of them on the floor so that you can get in the bed, you feel
Yes.
bad. Like I'm going to hurt the stuffed animals' feelings. But we're not seven anymore, and I can pick a favorite, a favorite seam ripper. I can do that. I don't need 11 seam rippers. So I went through and I got rid of duplicates. That was the first big thing. And then I looked specifically, because I sew primarily, I looked specifically at fabric. And the sheer volume of fabric that I was hanging on to for quote unquote someday, whenever down the road I was expecting to get to that project, was it was humiliating. It was really indicative more of a an acquisition mindset rather than a creative mindset that I started to think, I'm just getting this stuff and keeping it for the sake of keeping it, but am I really going to get there? So I went through and I selected. There were some things that I had kept in the back of a cabinet, and I thought, oh, I forgot that I owned this. If you forgot that you owned it, you don't need it.
Yeah.
But again, I had to give myself permission.
So was that the easy part? Or to be brutally honest here and, you know, completely transparent, as you're starting this, is it painful? I mean, not like you're not bleeding, but are you just
there may have been some crying. Yeah. There were a couple of times where I got to something and I said, oh, I forgot. I love this. And I had tried to be really firm with myself. You know, I'm sort of brutal about, mm-hmm. like in my closet, I'm brutal about getting rid of stuff at the end of the year. But with the fabric, I had things that I knew for a stone cold fact that I had collected 10 years ago, purchased 10 years ago, and had never used. What was I waiting? I was never going to use it. But it was really hard to get to the back of that cabinet and go, oh, I love this stuff. And so I had to work through that. And then I had to work through some of it has value that is placed upon it by other people. Mm-hmm. So there were some like fabric collections, for example, that were out of print. Mm-hmm. And I had every piece in fat quarters or in half yards. Mm-hmm. And other people would put a very high value on that and think, you have that? I can't believe that. It's like a collector's item.
You're my idol. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't want to have it. I wasn't going to use it. So I was only keeping it because it was important to somebody else. Mm-hmm. So then the other person should probably have it. The person to whom it had value should be the person who has it. But it was really, really difficult. It took me days and days and days to go. And I had to take breaks. There were times where I would be, you know, I'd have either.
I need to eat ice cream.
I need a moment. I need to walk out of the room for a moment. So it was really, really challenging to do that. Mm-hmm. The hardest part was not putting stuff back. So you make this giant pile and you've been very firm with yourself, and I would pull out bundles of fabric and stacks of fabric and yards of fabric and set them in this pile and say, this is all going. And to not wishy-wash was really, really difficult. But nothing compared to the feeling of seeing it go away. And you know, hearing from other people how excited they were to get it. That I got messages, you know, emails and messages and all over the place where people thought, oh, I've been looking for this for 2 years. You know, people who really, really wanted this piece of fabric that I had forgotten I had.
One of the things that we feel, I think, as we're getting rid of stuff is, you know what, I'm going to need it. As soon as I get rid of it, I'm going to need it. And you have actually walked this road. So speaking candidly, after you got rid of these things, did you have a moment where you're just like, ugh. Are you kidding me? I got rid of that?
Not once. And I really expected to. So my mother and I always joke, we've got this shopping thing that we say that if you don't buy something and you keep thinking about it, then it already belonged to you. You just forgot to buy it. Right? And so I think the opposite was sort of true here, that if I had it, but I never thought about it, mm-hmm. it doesn't really belong to me. It's just in my house.
That's
so
good.
What I kept telling myself was, they're not going to stop making fabric. There will be more. There's always, that was the problem to start with.
That's so liberating.
10 years worth of fabric. Exactly. And so that was the thing that I kept saying. They're not going to stop making fabric. This is not the last piece of fabric that will ever exist. And I had this vision, and my husband sort of teases me a little bit because every once in a while I have these like, I put myself in a post-apocalyptic mindset and I say, no, if there was total socioeconomic collapse and we are all like forced to grow our own food just to get by.
I could serve 20 yards.
Right. I could. But if all this stuff was sitting in my basement, moldering and not going to good use, would I be glad that I kept it? You know, like where are my values sitting if my basement is full of fabric I'm not sewing with? I would just rather get rid of it. Mm-hmm. I did not expect to have the side effect of renewed creativity, renewed excitement about my home, renewed excitement about my workspace. I did not expect to move furniture around and dust in the corner. You know, all of those things were side effects. And they were really exciting and liberating.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut this conversation short because now I want to like start tidying up my little creative space again.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
No, I'm just joking. That's awesome. And what I like is the fact that you're sharing something that it's working now. It wasn't working before. How do you bridge that gap? How do you take ownership over your dwelling? You know, this is where you're dwelling when you're being creative. This is where you hunker down and you're needing to have your space put a bit into you so that you can create and give out and give off. So that's a great lesson you've shared.
Well, and only you know what inspires you. There's
sure.
a certain amount of sort of social media pressure, I think, to have your workspace or your creative space look a certain way or be filled with certain things. And it was just really, really freeing to recognize that only I know what is going to make me feel motivated and excited and engaged in creating new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned that through this.
Well, since you've actually walked the walk and now you're talking the talk, and this was last year or the year before that you did this whole de-stash?
I keep telling myself it was last year, but I really think it was about 16 months ago.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I thought it was a little bit longer because I actually bought something off your de-stash for my mom, and she was stoked. I will tell you, she was stoked.
Oh. Yay!
I bought it. She came to visit. I gave it to her, and she's like, yeah. And as a mother who has two very beautifully curated and organized, like a library, fabric rooms,
right.
Yeah, you know, she has her own thing. I'm hoping that she's going to listen to this episode. But do you have some quick fixes and just kind of maybe one or two ideas that would help somebody today to kind of get a cluttered or overwhelming mess, or, you know, people who are kind of stuck in a rut because that creative sap spot has just, instead of it becoming a source of inspiration, it's become messy.
Yeah.
So maybe just one or two actionable things that people who are listening to this and they're like, yeah. And then they look up from their iPod and they're looking around and they're just like, no, I don't even know where to start. Are you kidding me? Deborah, what have you done? You've got me excited for nothing.
And now I can't even get started.
Yeah. I know you said like, for us going through knitting needles, you know, I heard you on that one. I use 18 pairs of size 8 needles simultaneously, but apart
in
from
which case,
that,
you don't have any duplicates because each of them has their own. You know,
yeah,
own
I can't find them. Blasted! There's like all on projects. I'm just like, how can I own 7,000 pairs of knitting needles and not have one in the can?
They're like shoes. Yeah.
Yeah, I do own more knitting needles than shoes, I will say. But no, just some simple things that when someone listening were to accomplish one or two, it's going to foster in them a real sense of, you know what, I can do this.
Right.
You know, this is not so overwhelming. Do you have a couple of pointers, some ideas?
Sure. Number one for me is always clean off your work table.
It sounds
inane. Of course you clean off your work table, but do you?
No, I don't.
Like, no, you don't. And some of it is staging. You know, this is the next project I'm going to work on, and it's here and it's out to remind me this is the next thing I'm going to work on. And some of it is this is a flat surface and I can put this on that flat surface. And some of it is I'm in the middle of a project and it's time to go to bed. And I think all of those have a different impact. For me, if I'm working on a project and I go to bed and I'm getting up the next morning and it's out, that's great. That's really motivating for me. But if that project is out and ready and there's also yesterday's cup of coffee and the mail and a box I need to put in the post, you know, like, and a delivery that can, you know, whatever, there's all this stuff stacked on the table, it's in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And my reaction to that invariably, because I have both my work table and my laptop are in the same room, is I look at it and I just shy away and go to the laptop.
Oh.
And then I'm not making anything. I'm just answering email or something, literally turning my back on the table where all this stuff is. But if I clean it off and it's just blank, suddenly I want to make something.
Yeah.
An empty table where I can spread out and get comfortable. And that might be your dining room table. It might be a little corner table. It might be a drop leaf table. But there's something about having available space where you can start that it just really gets people geared up.
So make space for creativity.
Right.
And
have it available. So, and my rule for myself is I go to bed and I tidy up, even if I'm leaving a project out that I'm going to start on the next day, I tidy up the project and make it ready for the next step. So it's not that it has to be a blank table.
Mm-hmm.
It's that it has to be an available workspace. And one of the biggest complaints I get from people who sew is that if they don't have a dedicated sewing space, what kills them is, you know, I only have an hour to sew. I only have 90 minutes to sew. And I have to get the machine out of the closet and I have to put it on the table and I have to set it up and get ready. And that's 45 minutes. And then it's time to take it away and put it away again so I can serve dinner on the same table. And it's very challenging for them.
Mm-hmm.
So even something small like a rolling cart
mm-hmm.
that where you can, you know, IKEA has a great one that's like $45, and the top level is exactly the right size for a sewing machine. And then there are two other trays below it, and it rolls away and it fits inside a closet, and it makes it easier for you to get things out and put things away, where you can start fresh. But the simplest and most immediate is definitely clean off your work surface so that you can get to it really easily. Or if you've got a chair, like let's say you're a knitter, make sure there's not an old newspaper and I don't know, used Kleenex or something next to your chair. It's an inviting place where you think, oh, I want to be there. I
Yeah,
want
be
to
good
be.
to yourself.
Right.
Take pride in the fact that you're going to be coming back to this spot. And for the sewers out there, I will say, my husband, part of his early career in the Coast Guard with search and rescue, they had to sew. He actually took a
I
sewing
know, I
course.
love
Yeah,
that.
and he can sew a parachute. He can sew a boat. I mean, like a raft. He's the man when it comes to sewing. And I will tell you, if you want to sew, because he has to take everything out because he cannot use my like super duper nice new emerald sewing machine. He has to use the brother that used to be good for me. You know what I'm saying? So he has to take everything out. I have seen that man put up a table, break out the thread, put out everything that he needs to do, and have it up and done in less than 5 minutes. So there is hope for people that really want to do a project when he's tired of waiting for me to do it and he's gonna
Right,
take
he
ownership.
just wants to get it
He's just
done.
like, I'm gonna sew. And then literally 5 minutes later, I'm like, dude, how are you sewing? He's like, I got everything out and put everything up. And when it's time to break it down, he's done. So
And
you can do it.
some of that has to be about putting it away in a tidy fashion and not just sort of. I'm sure he started with it organized to start with.
Yeah,
I'm
well,
trying to
actually,
picture
I put it
how
away, and
he's so
yeah,
efficient.
after he puts it away, I like take it out and I reorganize it. And so yeah, all the thread goes back in the right spot on that thread little easel. But yes, he is prepared. He does break it out. He does put it back. And yeah, I think if we as people who want to do something, if so and so calls you up and says, hey, you know what, I am going out to ice cream place A, because ice cream is one of my love languages. I'm leaving in 5 minutes. I can be in pajamas with nothing done
That's true,
except my teeth
actually.
brushed, and I am
In the
glamour
car,
queen
5 minutes
in
later,
five
right?
minutes. Yes, ready to
Just
go.
clean and
So
buckled
if you need to get ready, you can go. But
That's
so
true.
that's one, is to keep it kind of taking pride in your desk and cleaning things up. Can you give us one more actionable activity that somebody after they clean up, they're like, oh wow. Holy cow, it's clean. I've dusted this 4 by 2 square spot is clean. Before I put everything back in, what should I, what's another good activity or step, something they can apply after they've cleaned?
I love having projects on deck, and I'm not sure that everybody feels that way, but I like knowing what's coming next so that once it's clean, I don't have that moment where I say, well, now what do I do? But I like knowing, and this might be a little compulsive of me, but I don't want to collect a bunch of projects for someday. I want to collect projects and sort of have a little bit, not a restrictive plan for them, but I like to know, like people who use Ravelry, for example, you can rearrange in your queue the order in which your projects are scheduled for yourself, and I do that something similar with sewing that I like. Now that I've destashed and I've gotten all this fabric out of the way, I like to purchase fabric for a purpose, which, whoa, that was not how I shop for fabric for a very long time. So now I really want to purchase fabric specifically because I'm planning to make X pattern with it. And then I put the pattern and the fabric together, and I have a wire basket over in the side of the room where I organize those things. And I started doing that with fabric I already had on hand. I wasn't buying new fabric. I was going through the stuff I already had and trying to mate them,
Yeah,
like,
purposing them.
exactly right. So I already have this and I like it, but it's on the bottom of the shelf in the back of a cabinet where I never look at it. I'm going to pull it out and I'm going to wash it and dry it and make it, it's ready to go. I don't have to pull my fabric out and, oh, right, I didn't pre-wash it. I need to go wash it. Well, that's 2 hours before I can get started. So it's already pre-washed, it's already folded neatly, it's got the pattern right next to it, and it's ready to go. A lot of us don't have 4 hour blocks of time where we can, and we all need to sort of multitask all the time. So it's easier for me if I have the fabric pre-washed, fold it up, ready to go, patterns right next to it, and I can say, boom, my workspace is clean. I could squeeze in 35 minutes of work on this.
Oh, yeah.
I could get this cut out. And then it's cut out. And I have a number of projects that are already cut out. The pattern pieces are pinned to them, and they are folded back up and put back in that wire basket. And I just did this the other day. I pulled one out, and I said, I have 45 minutes, but I bet I could make some good progress on this skirt. And go ahead and get started and get it to another good stopping place before setting it aside again. So nothing says that you have to work start to finish. And I find that a little bit intimidating, the idea that I can't finish it right now, so maybe I shouldn't start. So I feel like having a clean workspace and then knowing what's coming next are really motivating for me. I don't know, is that useful?
That is. I was sitting here thinking about how it's such a blessing to hear from different creative hearts. You have a different, you know, manifestation of your creativity in the sense that you're a sewer. You are a creative fabric woman. You know, fabric is your muse and your sewing machine is your tool. And then for me, you know, primarily a knitter, I'm just thinking that whole creative thing that happens still happens pretty much in an organized order, or at least in a system. Whether your system is slightly different, I could still tweak it and get excited about it. And I think that it's very useful what you've shared, really useful. And I bet there are people that are listening with their heads nodding up and down.
Like, that would work for me.
Yeah, yeah, I can do that.
I read a great book recently called Daily Rituals,
mm-hmm.
Which was based on a blog that somebody wrote while he was procrastinating as a professional writer. And it's 160 different artists, scientists, creative people, primarily a lot of writers, but a lot of painters and designers, architects, people like that. And it's just their daily schedule. It's really interesting.
And what was it called again?
It's called Daily Rituals. And I got it off of Amazon. And so I read the whole thing. Fascinating, fascinating reading. It's short little blurbs because they're shorter than blog posts, a lot of these entries. And it will name who the artist is and what time period they lived in and then tell the story of their daily schedule. And I got so many ideas about ways that you can organize your creative time in order to maximize the benefit from that time. And what I noticed was what you were just saying. Everybody works differently. But you can learn a lot from listening to people talk about how they work. So, you know, some of them would get up at noon and work until the wee hours of the morning. And lots of them would get up super early in the day, you know, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning and get started right away and work until lunch. There seemed to be a lot of napping involved for a lot of these artists, especially the writers. They're like, and then I have lunch and take a nap. And I thought, that sounds amazing. But part of what I got out of it on the whole was it's okay to take breaks.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to take care of yourself in order to produce better work. You're not a less creative person if you don't work 20 hours a day. What mattered to most of these people, and a lot of them were, I mean, they're household names. These are people whose names you will recognize.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them really felt about their creative work that was, it didn't feel like work to them. This is something that I do because it's pleasurable, but it has a tangible outcome to the time that I spend on it. And that they looked forward to that time more if they did certain things, if they had certain parameters in place or schedules in place or things like that. So it was fascinating to read that and to reflect on not just my own daily schedule, like your hours, but also the physical space in which you work and think about how that can make your work easier or more challenging or make the time more pleasurable or more burdensome.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting to me.
Well, as we kind of get ready to shift gears from this topic to some things that are really creative, I think, in your future. I was wondering, you know, we've pretty much been talking about your creative space where you are making something. But how is it that your personal space, apart from the studio or your craft room, you know, what are some ways that you bring sewing into your family life? Because sewing is so much a part of who you are. It's not just something you do. You're a very creative being. And I think knitters and spinners and other people who are creative would be interested in hearing how you take your love and your passion and actually take it outside of the specialty spots that you have for it. What are some ways that sewing is a part of your family and your community, your area.
Yeah, I think part of what a lot of us love about fiber arts, sort of as a general umbrella term, is that it makes something useful. So that's so appealing to me. I don't just like making my own clothing, which I love, and making my children's clothing or making clothing even for my husband, because I do all of that on a regular basis. I love doing that. It makes me much more selective when I shop, because you look at something and you think, I could make this, so why would I buy it? But the same thing is true for your home, that you look around and I don't have store-bought window treatments. I make my right, currently are somewhat tragic because I haven't put in the time to make really, really good ones. But again, because I know I can make them, I keep waiting to have exactly what I want. So I have the opportunity as someone who sews to dream maybe a little more than someone who is restricted by what's available in stores, that I can be super, super picky, and that it is a creative act to look around your home, your bedroom, even if it's just one room, and think, what kind of environment do I want to build? What kind of emotion do I want to embrace? What colors do I want to use? What would make me feel good when it greets me each day? Do I want bright colors? Do I want muted colors? Do I want texture? Do I want minimalist? I think it's a hugely underappreciated creative act to look around the space where you spend most of your time. You know, we spend how many hours a day in our bedrooms? It should be a welcoming space. So, you know, so I like little things like bed skirts. You would think not a big deal, but I make bed skirts for our home because they hide the cords that are under the bed and you don't have to sweep underneath quite so much. And
well, that is actually, before you go too much further, that is the thing I want to play a game with you.
Oh,
I actually wrote down a list of things. So we're going to play a game. I'm going to say a room, and you're going to say yes or no. And the yes means you have something in that room that you have sewn or made.
Okay.
And then you can tell us or not. And if you haven't, you can say no, and it's not a big deal. So
Just painting furniture count? Or we're just talking soft goods, like things that have been sewn.
What we're going to do is we're going to make it harder for you. So we're going to say soft goods.
Okay, good. Okay.
And if you've knit something for the particular room, you get extra credit.
Okay.
She's like, oh my gosh, does that ball of yarn that I wound count? No.
I don't have a lot of knits. That's true. Yeah.
That's okay. You've got a lot of fabric, which is made out of fiber, which it all starts with F. Okay. So, all right. The bathroom.
Oh, yes.
Okay, what?
I have a makeup tray. It's got a waterproof fabric on the underside, and then it's got little squared off corners that I use to corral all of my moisturizers on the countertop.
Okay, that's your bathroom. How about the kids' bathroom?
Is there anything in the kids? Yes, their shower curtain.
Oh, good girl. Good for you. Okay, kitchen.
I've knitted dishcloths.
Oh my gosh, I love this.
Go to knit. And have I sewn anything else for the kitchen? I have purchased fabric to make Roman shades that have not yet been made. So maybe I only get half credit for that.
So no hand towels? I mean, I know my mom, one of her favorite things for me is to fix that need that I'm just like, Mom, I want a hand towel, this fabric. And so she cuts the top off and the bottom off and she puts a little piece of fabric on the ends.
Nice. No, I have a small collection of travel dish towels, you know, like flour sack dish towels with locations on them that I really love. So we use those in the kitchen for the most part.
Okay. So no coasters? You have any kitchen coasters? No.
Not even a trivet. I have a bamboo trivet that I brought back from Hawaii.
Oh, good for you. Where were you in Hawaii?
Oahu and the Big Island.
Oh, good girl. All right. Okay. Garage.
Garage. Ooh, I know. Getting challenging. Is there anything in the garage that I have sewn? I might have nothing, unless you count the organizer in my Honda Odyssey.
I was going to say cars on the list. Cars in the garage.
That organizes like the tissue box and all the random bits in the car.
That counts. I'm giving you a check mark. Yay. All right. Your bedroom.
Yes. Yeah. So I have a quilt on the bed. Mm-hmm. I have a bed skirt. I have a slip cover on the footstool at the end of the bed that the dog rubbed up against one too many times. It's just foul and funky. That might be everything in the master bedroom.
Okay, kids' rooms?
They all have quilts. Each of them has a quilt that I made for them. Our son has a bed skirt. The girls do not. And then tons and tons of clothes, of course, but those don't really count. Oh, and their curtains. I made curtains for all their windows.
Okay. Well, now we're moving into the closet. So the clothes in the closet, you can say tons of clothes. So your closet.
My closet is probably 40% handmade.
Awesome. Okay, aside from things hanging on hangers, anything else in the closet? Organizers, hangers, anything?
No.
Purses?
So I do have some handbags. I have a lot of tote bags. I have some handbags.
Okay, kids, same thing?
Lots of stuff. So much stuff, yes.
Yeah. All right. Toys? Do you ever do fabric toys?
I used to do a lot of soft toys when they were littler, but our kids are elementary aged. So doll clothes, there are a lot of doll clothes that I've made.
Wow. That is so many toys. Super extra credit because doll toys are so small and so aggravating.
So tiny. But you don't have to finish anything. That's the great thing about doll clothes is everything's Velcro, so yeah. You don't have to.
Staple.
You buttons, but yeah, exactly. And you don't have to finish the seams because they're not really going to go through the washer. So.
All right. We've got just a couple more rooms. Dining room? Obviously, everything in the dining room.
So many cloth napkins. I can't even talk about how many cloth napkins. A couple of table runners. I think all our tablecloths might be store-bought.
Oh.
But I think I have something in the neighborhood of 36 cloth napkins.
Okay, because we're the opposite. We use, instead of tablecloths, all of ours are hand-sewn, either by me or my mom. They we use placemats, pretty fabric
right.
placemats.
And we do actually have some placemats, now that I think about it.
Okay, living room?
The curtains. Living room, a couple of pillows, for sure. And then I have quilts on every, chair or sofa. There's always a quilt because I'm constantly freezing. It could be 72 outside and I'll be cold. So there are quilts on every surface and then some pillows and then the curtains.
All right, utility closet.
What's
or
a
hall
utility closet?
Or a hall closet.
What's a utility closet? I have a number of knitted scarves. In the hall closet.
Look at you.
What else have I sewn that's in there? Ooh, I am working on, it's not finished, it will live in the hall closet, a garment bag for my husband for Valentine's Day. Don't tell him. Go over his winter coat in the office because we live in the southeast and so it's not winter for very long here, which means he's got this beautiful wool coat for the 4 days a year when it's 20 degrees outside. But then the rest of the year it hangs in the closet and gets dusty. So I'm working on a fabric garment bag for his nice coat that will go in the hall closet.
Any rooms we missed?
I don't think so. The kids have a playroom and they've got some fabric storage buckets in there. I don't think I realized I'd made something for every room in the house.
So your creative projects, things that you've made with your hand, your handy art, your hand art is all over your home, which I think is fabulous. So you win! Yay!
Yay! Awesome. Good. I was a little concerned when you said garage.
No, I was thinking the cars in the garage, or I was thinking the, some people write off the garage, they consider it the garage, but it's the laundry room. And they're like, oh yeah, my ironing board cover and this and that and everything in the garage, the little hangers that you put shoes in or whatever. But I was just envisioning the whole thing in like prom gown, pink taffeta. Just kidding. But well, you've shared a lot of things that I think will benefit us. But I'm curious now as to what are some other ways that we can connect with you as far as, because I know people are listening and they're just like, I love this woman. Because that's how I felt the first time I read your first book, which I know I've said number of times that my mother is, I think, the most wonderful seamstress in the whole world. No offense to you, but I love her. And of course, you know, I do different things with her. My first book that she gifted me was your first book that you created. And just since then, I've just been like, oh my gosh, you're just such a stellar person. What are some new things that are on your horizon that we can kind of come alongside and really get to know you more, or to continue building ourselves up in sewing or just craftiness in general? What do you have going on? I'm interested.
Yeah, well, I loved writing books. And after I wrote my second book, in between the first and second book, I started doing a lot of online teaching and have really, really, really loved that because it gives me a chance instead of writing to actually talk to people. Mm-hmm. So this year I have taken the experience that I've gotten from teaching online and I've tried to develop a couple of subscription clubs that I'm working on that distill my experience and work to really connect people to one another. So I've got one garment making club and one quilting club that I'm doing in 2016 that are all taught online and are really designed to help people connect with one another and master their sewing and find other people who are doing what they're doing to help keep them inspired and motivated to keep learning and growing. So it's really fun.
So the garment club, is that, you know, somebody's listening, we're going to make a dress every single month?
No, it's
Okay.
called the League of Adventurous Dressmakers,
I love
because
it.
we all want to be sewing superheroes, and it's designed for anyone who wants to make their own clothing. But each month, instead of, because it really seems like too much to tackle another pattern every month, and I think
Oh, yeah.
there's a lot of potential there to fall off, to have good intentions in January, and then you get to June, July, August, and you've fallen off a little bit. And my goal with online instruction is always that you finish what you start, because that to me
Okay.
is the most motivating thing, is to
Yes.
see that completed product, to see some growth in your own skills. So that's how this group is designed. So each month you get, we drill down as a group on a particular garment sewing technique. So things like how to sew a shirt collar, or how to sew a really great seam and do different seam finishes, and where and what kind of garment you would use those on, or how to do different kinds of hemming and hem finishes, or how to make buttonholes. Like, we really drill down on very narrow, specific garment making techniques that have broad application, but that give you the opportunity to maybe jump into something you wouldn't do until you got to a pattern. And then each month, so you get video, usually about an hour of video each month. You get a downloadable technique guide with full color step-by-step photos that gives you all the instructions for how to do the different techniques. So, like in January, we did how to sew a shirt collar, and there were three different techniques for how to sew a shirt collar, and the technique guide goes through the parts of the shirt collar and all three techniques, and some different types of collar that you might run into, and gives suggestions for different sewing patterns on the market that use that style of collar. So you have a place to go once you've learned the technique, if you want to actually try a bigger pattern, to test that out on. And gives lists of blogs and books and places that you can go to extend your learning beyond what we're doing as a group. And then in addition to all that, there's a message board where you can add different threads and discussion messages to meet other people and ask questions. And there's a private Facebook group where people can interact, and it will actually pop up in your feed as the day goes on to keep fresh in your mind. You get a couple of emails every month. I do like coloring pages and sort of fun bonus freebies as the month goes on.
So it's a
And it has.
community. I mean, it's not just you sitting behind a computer and sewing a collar. You've got a whole community of people that are doing what you're doing.
And that really is my number one motivation. It's not just because there are so many places that you can go to find information. The
Oh,
internet is an
yeah.
amazing place. I think what causes people to not go in search of that information a lot of the time is uncertainty about how to apply what they learn. So,
Yeah.
that's great that you're showing me how to do that, but when do I do that? Or where do I do that? Or on what pattern do I do that? And also, many of us learn better when we feel that we're not alone in whatever endeavor we're pursuing. So
Sure,
I don't want to be in
absolutely.
the boat paddling by myself. I want to know that you're rowing along with me. And if I make a mistake, or if I fall down, or if I get confused, someone else either has gone through that before me and can help me feel a little bit better about not understanding, or someone else is in the exact same place as me and we can figure it out together. So that's totally my goal. I want people to meet their people and to find other folks who are really excited and passionate about what they're excited about.
That's
And
such
it's
a
already
good
been so,
goal.
it's so good.
So that one, I think you guys all need like little t-shirts so that way you can pull your cardigans back and show this big, like Superman, like I'm a super seamstress. So this in a nutshell though, as I'm listening, and correct me if I'm wrong, which happens a lot, so don't feel bad, but as I'm listening to you, if you're someone like I love knitting or sewing something that I can wear. I love creating something for a wardrobe. And not necessarily me, but for my kids or whatever. So this actually will help if you're into garments. The part that I have is sometimes it looks like it's, homemade, which I know homemade is kind of cute, but I don't want to look cute sometimes. I want to look really professional and
Or
clean.
put
So
together, right? Like
is
it's real
this going to
clothes.
slowly walk me through so that way it's more of like handmade or
Exactly. And that's
artisan
exactly the
work.
distinction. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that I talk about the difference between something looking homemade and looking handmade.
Oh yeah. So you do think there is a difference? Because I know I feel like that sometimes. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like I made it. Oh, it's like I didn't buy it at the store, as opposed to, oh my gosh, you cannot get this at the store.
Right. And one of the things that I asked, because there are 12 months, we'll go January through December in 2016, and I asked the group as they were registering to answer a survey. So I selected six topics that I felt were really core and key and covered a lot of individual skills in neat packages. So we're doing seams and seam techniques and collars and buttons and cuffs and things like that, where I can tackle a lot of things pretty coherently in smaller packages. But then the other six, I made a survey and listed, I think, 24 different topics and asked everybody to complete the survey and make selections. So half of the year is determined by me, sort of, you know, guided, teacher guided, and the other half of the year is determined by the league members saying, these are the things where we feel like we really want more direct instruction, more chance to explore, more communication with our peers. And one of them is like taking a commercial pattern and blending between sizes. Like, how do I know what size I wear so that I don't look like I'm wearing some homemade dress? I look like I'm wearing a fitted garment that was customized for me.
Right.
And things like that, that I feel like it really is an opportunity to take this group of people and all have a say in what we're doing and discuss the goals that we're setting for ourselves in terms of the quality of the work we're producing, while at the same time honoring and embracing and enjoying the process of what we're making. So it's not about making clothes really, really fast. It's about making really great quality clothes and enjoying the process of making them. As a group, as a community who all really understand each other.
And so this club is called, one more time,
the League of Adventurous Dressmakers.
Oh, that's so awesome. And where can we find out how, well, first tell us, you said it's for the year. And so it's a monthly payment or it's?
It is. It's a monthly subscription payment. So you don't have to pay a flat fee up front. You pay month by month and you can cancel whenever you want. So if you start at the beginning of the year and you decide at the end of the year that you don't like making clothes after all, you can always you can always cancel your subscription. But so far it has been so, so, so enjoyable that I think everybody's going to want to stick it through December.
And that's available on your website?
It is, whip-stitch.com. And you can just go to the classes tab and you'll find it there.
So classes, there are more than one. So is there a new another one that's new that's out that you're excited about? Or
the other one I'm super excited about. Yeah, my quilting group I'm super excited about and equally excited about because I love making garments. I also love making quilts. And very frequently throughout the beginning of each new year, I see mystery quilts come out. And I love the idea of a mystery quilt that you are making a quilt month by month. A lot of them are termed block of the month clubs. And so each month you make a portion, a section of the quilt. But because it's a mystery quilt, you don't know what the final project is going to look like when you finish. It's going to be, it's like you're making a puzzle, but you don't see the puzzle box necessarily. You just see a little section of the puzzle box as you go. And every year I hear the phrase mystery quilt, and for at least 4 years, maybe longer, I would think, but shouldn't it be a mystery? Shouldn't it be like a murder mystery? And I had this idea that if I'm making a mystery quilt, I want to
I want to kill someone. No, I'm just kidding. I love murder mysteries. That's why I'm just so stoked about this. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I watch all the mystery shows. I love Jessica Fletcher. I love Columbo. I love Monk. I love all of them. I read all the mystery books. I've read every Agatha Christie. I just I really adore mysteries. And this seemed like such a fun idea to me, but I was worried it was a little bit hokey, you know?
No.
So I asked people, I said, what would you think about doing a club that's sort of a book-centered club that makes a quilt? And people were tremendously enthusiastic about it. So this year I'm launching the Murder Mystery Quilt, where you get a serialized murder novel, murder mystery book, and every month you get a chapter of the story. And every chapter sort of ends on a little bit of a cliffhanger so that you're excited to read the next one the following month. You also get each month an accompanying quilt block. The quilt block is directly related to the chapter you've just read, and hidden in the block is at least one additional clue that doesn't appear in the text of the book. And the idea is that as you assemble the quilt, you're getting closer and closer and closer to catching the killer.
So you have to do your homework for the month because it's not only fun and enjoyable, but it's going to help solve the case.
Right. And if you do your homework, you get a bonus clue. So everybody who takes a picture of their finished quilt block each month and posts it to social media gets a bonus clue in their email. So you get even more information to help you solve the mystery as we go along. And then at the end of the year, everyone gets one guess who they think the killer is, and all the correct guesses go in a hat, and a name gets drawn out to win a prize of fabric and quilting supplies and notions that goes to everybody who guesses correctly. And I sort of put a little twist in. Some people are, you know, there's always a Jessica Fletcher in the group. There's always a Miss Marple who figures it out at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I said, if you use your one guess before the end of the year, like let's say in June, you are 1,000% certain that you know who the killer is, you get one entry per month early that you guessed. So if you guess in June, you don't get one entry in the hat. You get your name in the hat 7 times if you're correct. Sort of as a bonus for really trying to figure out who the bad guy is.
Oh my gosh, I want to do this.
I can't even talk about how much fun it is. And there's a chance, you know, not everybody gets the end of the novel. Sometimes you're reading it and it's fun to read, but you're really not puzzling out who the killer is. You're just in it for the enjoyment of reading the story. So there's a whole other prize basket for people who don't guess correctly, but who finish the project. So if you make all 12 quilt blocks over the year, then you get your name in a separate hat to win a separate prize. So everybody gets a chance
everybody wins.
Yeah, because again,
everybody gets a quilt at the end eventually.
I want you to finish the project. I don't want you to start at the beginning of the year and get to August and just have given it up, and then you feel like you've wasted time and energy and money. That I want it to be something purposeful. The quilt is really modern and fun to look at. So if you didn't know the story behind the quilt, you would still want to make the quilt. I think it's that beautiful.
Oh, wow.
But if you do know the story behind the quilt, how much more fun is that?
Yes.
And I think people love to look at projects and then say, well, the story is. It's just a really, I think it's a great way to enliven your month as you go through the year.
Oh, yeah. I love stories, too. But I have a couple quick questions. Story. Yeah. Did you write the story?
I did. An undergraduate degree in English and an obsessive collection of mystery novels. So this was tapping into all of my happy places.
Oh, my goodness. And you designed the quilt?
Yes.
And now the level of capability for someone to sew the quilt, what are we kind of looking at?
Specifically designed for any level, from adventurous beginner to expert. So there, I have about 40% of the people who are currently registered. This is their first quilt.
Oh.
And every month when you get the instructions, you get the quilt pattern for the block. They usually are 3-ish pages, 2 to 3 pages. And each block has a different skill in it. So the block for the first month included half square triangles, but there's a whole page of instructions about how exactly to do that. Mm-hmm. So if you've never made a quilt before, you may not know how to do this, but you'll know how after, which means you'll be able to go on and make all that opens up a whole lot of different quilt patterns for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, just to qualify it, this is emailed to you. It is a place where you download the material yourself. It's a video. Can you just clarify that one more time?
You get an email every month. The email has a direct link to an online class site. And so we actually have a place on the web with a built-in discussion board where you can ask questions and have them answered and connect with other people, where you can go back and re-download multiple times if you lose your pattern or you need another copy. Mm-hmm. There's also a private Facebook group with this where people are interacting with one another. Every once in a while, I drop an extra clue in there. You get weekly Facebook posts. So there's a lot of other support stuff going on, places to go on the web and try to ferret out additional clues. You get to look at everybody else's blocks as the month goes along. But you get at least 2 alerts in your inbox every month to bring it to your attention.
That's so cool. Yeah, you have been busy. 2016 is going to be a fun filled year for you.
I can hardly contain myself. I haven't been this excited to get up and start working every morning in a long time. So I'm really, really
so awesome.
Delighted. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm really thankful that you took the time to spend with us today and just share with us, you know, just who you are, what you have to share with people. And now I'm really stoked about these 2 clubs. And I'll be sure that in the download that everyone received for this episode, that we have links to these. But one more time, if they want to find it right now as they're listening, it is in the podcast notes where you can click on it. Or, Deborah, you want to tell us one more time where we can go?
whip-stitch.com. And there, it's on the slider on the main page, or you can just click on the classes tab and it will take you straight there.
That is awesome. And I hope that sound of my stomach growling did not come through.
I didn't hear anything.
Okay, great, because I am hungry. I'm so excited. I get excited about something creative, and my stomach grumbles because I have to I have to go eat ice cream. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not going to eat ice cream, but I am going to say thank you one more time. This has been such a delightful time. I appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to sit with us today, and also for your fabulous article that you wrote in the second issue of Six Bits.
Oh, thank you.
I just feel so
flattered that you invite me to do this stuff. It's so exciting, and you're always so good to talk to.
You're a gem, and I appreciate it, so thank you. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's podcast. You did? Well, connect our stories then. Drop me a line at hellomelissa@sixbitsstorybooks.com. You can connect with Deborah at whipstitch.com. You can tell everyone what you think by leaving an iTunes review, which I can't tell you how fun it is to see those. So to all of you who have done that, mahalo nui loa. Until next week, wherever you are, whatever you are doing, remember, you are amazing. And your story is too. So share it with someone.